Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, back in the rugby dungeon, as we have been every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, for 10 years and counting. The podcasting OGs in rugby, the ones that are there for you, whether a World Cup's on or whether there's no rugby on whatsoever, we're always there for you. And for that, we appreciate you listening. You can reward us or thank us or whatever, you know, show your appreciation by hitting that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, and by going for some more spicy private members only content at patreon.com/eggchasers. I'm in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello Tim, how are you?
Very tight trousers you got on there.
Love these. I didn't used to like them, but I'm really getting into them now.
Would you call them tights?
They're as tight as tights, but they're not tights.
They're not. They're
and they're green as well. It's kind of like you're ready for Panto, Peter Pan.
Yeah, they're cool. I really like these. These are my, what are they? What's that brand again?
Castor.
You'd look great if you were wearing Phil's top. How you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim.
Too small for me, that.
It would be too small for you, but those trousers are too small for you. It's not stopped you wearing them. You would be a bit too green wearing this top with those trousers.
Do you boys know the story behind Castor?
Two blokes from the Northwest.
Yeah.
Liverpool and Manchester. They got links to Liverpool and Manchester, I know there's a story about them with Wolves that you've told on the pod before.
Yeah, so the story of Wolves is great, but that's not really Castor story. It's more of a Wolves story. But allegedly...
And then these guys make Saracens kit.
And Harlequins and Bath.
And Leinster.
That Bath stash is lovely.
Good, isn't it?
Really nice. Yep.
So they're based in Manchester, but apparently the brothers, one went and did the legal side, went to train, has got legal training and background. The other one did accountancy. And they did that with the plan of coming together and forming a business in the future. So they had a well-rounded background in business from two different disciplines.
Did you say they're brothers?
Yeah.
All right.
They're young as well.
They haven't gone... I was going to say, is it kind of a Gymshark type thing? Because those are young guys.
They are young.
Yeah.
Exploded.
Tell you what, I love Gymshark. You feel when you go on the website, they actually take things seriously. Like, they think of things that you actually want to wear.
So I'm just looking at this. Founded in 2015, so 8 years ago.
Wow.
When they were 25 and 22 respectively.
Wow.
So they're now 30 and 33.
Wow.
Doing okay.
Yes, one would imagine. Doing okay.
And they haven't done what happened with other brothers in this line of work, like the brothers behind Adidas and Puma, is it?
Yeah, Adi Dassler and Rudy Dassler.
Yes.
Who fell, I think they famously fell out.
Yeah. And I think did the brothers, because there's two German brothers that are Aldi and Lidl as well.
They are.
Yes.
But I think that was
There's Aldi and Aldi. It's not Aldi and Lidl.
It's not, yeah.
So Aldi is separated like...
North and South.
South Germany, and that's the border.
I think that was an amicable, I think. I've never really read about it, but I understand that was Aldi North and Aldi South in Germany.
There used to be a rumour that Aldi...
It was geographic split.
Aldi or Lidl, or Aldi and Lidl, they have their own construction team, so they build their own shops.
Mm.
So they have their own in-house construction firm. That's what I heard. I
mean, it wouldn't surprise me. It'd just be basically procurement.
Yeah, and put some
do it on like construction management or management contracting.
This is a rugby podcast. I mean, we'll get on to some.
It was like those Castor brothers who are furnishing many of the teams around the UK and Ireland.
The reason I'm interested in Castor is because Beardmore & Co, independent financial advisors for all your pension and investment needs. We've been doing lots of networking. And I went networking at the networking event called the K Club, which is run by two great guys. And we're thinking of doing a new networking series in Manchester based all on the business of sport. So we're trying to get hold of Castor to present to us about their story.
Mm.
In fact, we've already got quite a few guests lined up. So if, accountants or solicitors, criminal solicitors who represent sports people, agents. If only we knew someone in sports media, Tim Cocker, to come in.
if you need a compare or anything, I'm there
for you,
mate.
Absolutely. So look out for that, because I'll be giving you some more details on that soon. Anyway, rugby. Some rugby happened.
Yeah, great weekend. So,
well, is it a great weekend, though?
Well, yeah, because the mighty Bayonne ended Poe's reign at the top of the top 14 and got a great win at home.
I mean,
so well done to the mighty Bayonne.
That's very good.
My team.
Some of the few bits of good news come out of this weekend. Thankfully, everyone's least favourite club, Marlow, lost.
Almost everyone's least favourite.
Sorry, Tim's favourite club, everyone else's least favourite club. Aylesbury got an absolute spanking.
Poor Aylesbury. No one likes to see that.
Broughton Park lost. I mean, I can't say I'm too sad about that. And Tock H lost.
But Sedgley Park won in the Manchester Derby. Again.
Did they? Who's Manchester Derby?
Well, kind of Manchester Derby. Sale FC.
They beat Sale?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
is a Manchester
wow.
Derby. That's like North Manchester v South
Manchester.
Kinda.
Kind of Cheshire borders.
Kinda.
Crikey. So I heard that Sale... I've not really looked at Sale FC results. They're not doing well.
They've been struggling.
And it's something to do with the World Cup, because obviously the players left for the World Cup, and then they played the Premiership Cup, which is all the reserves and whatnot. And Sale FC get a lot of lads from Sale Sharks, but they were all employed doing Premiership Cup stuff, so they were shorn of a lot of players.
But we had, talking of derbies, we had basically a weekend of derbies in the Premiership.
Yeah.
Great.
Right. Can I decide what game to start with?
Yes, please.
The Battle of the North. No, not that one. Bloody Saracens. What can you say about this team?
Let me start with an email. contactoutchasers@gmail.com. This one from Rowan Akers, who said, just a quick one on Quins v Sarries. I obviously understand this should be our derby because of proximity. However, I'm kind of over the overhyping of this game. This feels more like Sarries simply live rent-free in Quinn's heads.
Couldn't agree more.
As opposed to a huge rivalry. Looking back at our head-to-heads in the Premiership, if you take out one game in 2020 where Sarries were already being relegated, the last time Quinn's beat us was 2017. Including that game...
2017?
If you take it... So they've won once since 2017. He said, even including that game, the last 30 games, it's 24-6 in Sarri's favour, both home and away. I quite like Quins, their team, and the way they play, but we just seem to have their number. Perhaps they should spend more time training for the game instead of slagging off our, quote, plastic pitch and, quote, lack of fans. Just my two penneth worth.
I think he's absolutely right. I couldn't agree more with any of that. You've just got to shower Saracens with praise. I mean, to do that to your closest rivals, I was watching this in the pub, and they were just battering...
It was a beatdown.
Harlequins. Harlequins has got I think 60 minutes in, 70 minutes in, Harlequins have got three points.
Yeah.
3 points. And Saracens are just taking them to town. They know... It's just such an incredible team, because it doesn't matter really what you throw at them. You can relegate them, you can get rid of all their players.
You can have injured players in the warm-up.
Yeah.
And the next cam up the ramp steps in, does really well.
You know,
Lazowski dropping out after 2 minutes.
Exactly.
You do whatever you want to Saracens, and they seem to somehow be able to put it all together.
As we said last week, their players just cannot get enough of playing for them.
Even their players are starting to age.
Yeah.
Massively. They really are.
I just thought it's one for the ages, this. To do that to you. And let's just talk about Quins for a second. So, this is not a bad Quins team. I think they're one of the best teams in the Premiership.
Well, they went away to Leicester And Leicester are a very, very good team. I know the table doesn't reflect that because they've been missing so many internationals. Mm. But they got the majority of their internationals back last week. Quinns went away and beat them.
A really comprehensive performance.
Yeah.
You look at how they play, look at the players that they had out there. I mean, it wasn't that they weren't trying. They were trying incredibly hard. But Saracens just fanned out across the pitch, let them play as much as they wanted, and then smacked them in the mouth numerous times. I think the linchpin of this Saracens team, it's not any of the big name English internationals. I think it's Nick Tompkins. I think he just sets that standard of aggressiveness in defence. I think he's stepped up to a different level now.
Well, the talk in the week of which Mark McCall would not comment, understandably, on the contract expired and being renegotiated with Maro Itoje and Owen Farrell suggests that they, Saracens, Mark McCall, thinks Owen Farrell is the linchpin of the team because he's the guy being offered the cash and Maro Itoje is reportedly being offered half what he's currently on and as a result may go elsewhere.
If you take Owen Farrell out of that team, they're not going to be as good, right? They're going to be a lot less good. Tompkins does the same job as Brad Barrett, which he allows Owen Farrell to play to his maximum capability. Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference. You know,
if only people listened to me years ago when I was saying Nick Tompkins could do a job for England. It pains me.
Mm. Yes.
No, he's one that England will look at as getting away. And there's another boy playing today who has accumulated several Man of the Match awards already this season, who England will also probably think it would be nice to have Andy Christie available in their ranks because he is playing absolutely out of his skin at the moment.
Scotland's Andy Christie.
Yeah.
So,
can I just say on that, because there was in the was it the Bath? I can't remember what game it was. I can't remember which game it was. I was watching this weekend, and the commentator described it as it was Nick Tompkins described him as the Welsh centre. And I think we have to be careful here. It's like, you could say the Wales centre, and that's accurate. Yeah. Nick Tompkins is not Welsh.
Well,
he's not remotely Welsh, and that's fine. And it would be like going, the Irishman CJ Stander.
Yeah,
It's like, no, he plays for Ireland. He was never Irish.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. He's not Welsh, is he? He's not Welsh. He's a bloody good player, though. He's
damn
so
good
aggressive.
Player. So good.
Like, and he brings out that... So him and Farrell, the way they defend together, they just have... They're not the best technical defenders. Like, they're not... I'm trying to think of someone who's just great at tackling and never misses tackles. I can't
Courtney
think of
Laws?
Him. Someone like that. They're not him. They're just far more aggressive.
You're trying to think of a 12. Okay.
Yeah. The other thing as well, and then I'll hand over to you boys to talk this over. I've now come to the conclusion that Smith, first name?
Marcus. Magic Marcus.
Magic Marcus Smith is not fit to lace Owen Farrell's boots.
Wow, you're saying this?
That's what I've come to.
Yeah. If this is coming from JB, goodness.
I've never been totally in love with him, but I thought he's probably going to be a better option than Owen Farrell. But like, how can you be if you lead your team to this kind of beat? You're meant to be the man. Like, you're meant to be the man that leads your team, and these are the games against your biggest rival. Not only your biggest club rival, but also your biggest positional rival. And you do that. What a joker.
He always has very special moments, and he had a couple.
Yeah.
He had a couple in this game.
So, Mark Atkinson, of all people, we were talking over a certain inside centre. I won't tell you which one.
You and Mark Atkinson were talking.
Me and Mark Atkinson.
Right? Oh, a lovely name drop there.
Yeah. Mm. Because I think it's a really interesting insight from him. And he was saying that the inside centre that we were talking about, he said he's great because he has these flashes of genius, but you need to get all the basic stuff consistently. And one of the reasons they were saying this is because the player was in a poor team, so every time the ball came to him, he had to do something. And I think with Marcus Smith, yeah, he does flashes of genius. He needs to win games. That's what he's there for. Win games and win this type of game.
This is the type of game he's got to be controlling and commanding. And this week, he didn't. He was summarily outshone by his opposite man.
And not only, and if you want more echoes back to the World Cup, when there was two things which the Rugby World Cup emphasised, and it was one, exactly what you've just said, fly halves need to do the absolute basics really well. And secondly, you can't win without a scrum.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Saracens battered them.
And this, again, it's not like Harlequins have not invested in that scrum. I mean, they've got a bloody great front row.
Yeah.
They're starting front row. I mean, who was it?
England's Joe Marler, England's Jack Walker, and Will Collier.
Will Collier, who a lot of people think if he's South African, will probably get a good run.
Yeah, we were talking him up as a potential, like, talking up how well he was playing.
Yeah.
And he was.
What happened, boys?
I'm with Tyre Headlock, Joe Launchbury.
Yeah,
there's just no excuse for it. There's no excuse for that performance. They should be ashamed of themselves, actually. Like, and I know what they'll do, because this is rugby. They go, we've taken our learnings, the boys came in on Monday, there's a great attitude. No, it's an absolute disgrace, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
I definitely think Saracens were just outstanding.
They really were. Like,
they really were great.
Quinn's very, very poor. How much of that is Quinn's being poor? How much of that is Saracens just making them look so poor?
Saracens can get under your skin like nobody else.
They really can. I mean,
when Sale were on their run, not this season, but not last season, but the season before, do you remember when Tompkins, of course, really got to Byron McGuigan? Like, they can do that's where all the clapping comes from. You know, when you see Ben Earl celebrating knock-ons and whatnot, and they're all going wild, or all the Saracens lads are, that's what they do. They go wild, and you're thinking, who are these idiots? We hate them so much. And you hate them even more when they win, and then it just breeds contempt, and you can't deal with it. You're fighting yourself rather than Saracens towards the end.
Knowing that Phil went to... Did you both go to Lancaster?
No,
just Phil. Phil went to Lancaster. Oh, no, that's right, you went to Bristol. So Phil went to Lancaster Uni. I was coaching Manchester Metropolitan against your
Lancaster my boys. Old boys.
They had a good win, and I had exactly that. Even as the coach, I just had to take some deep breaths and just go... Let it go, because loads of the lads on the touchline who were there on the piss, going along with them on the road trips. It made me miss those uni road trips so much.
Oh, it's good fun.
So much good fun. And some of them had the ski masks and all that sort of shit. Anyway, so they're really good crack. But every single tiny little thing, they would all go, woo! Woo!
Yeah.
It under my skin.
I like it as a player. When we're doing well, I like it.
You like it when it's your team doing it for you and things are going well. When the opposition are doing it, when you drop the ball and the opposition are wooing in your face. Yeah. It's horrible.
Pure Saracens behaviour.
Yeah. And Saracens, you mentioned Ben Earl. Saracens, I'll just put Ben Earl on the bench, England's number 8. Just rest him for this big derby match.
Well, he's on crutches.
Huh?
He's on crutches.
What?
That's why he got rested, because he was on crutches.
Was it? He was on the bench, wasn't he? Or did he get injured in the warm-up?
I think he either got injured in the warm-up or... He's definitely on crutches. Injured.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh.
And possibly... we don't know the severity of the injury, but it didn't look great.
Oh.
So,
knee.
Oh, we might just that's not
talk
good.
At this point about the Saracens deals, which are coming up.
Yes. Which you referenced before, Tim.
So one marquee player they're allowed now, not two. So by that inference, Maru Itoje and Owen Farrell are the two marquee players. They're going to retain Owen Farrell as the marquee player on the big bucks, and Maru Itoje therefore cannot be paid what he's currently being paid.
And do you know what he's been paid?
$800K. Oh.
Is the rumour,
rumour.
And we know...
Is he worth $800K?
Well, we know his...
As a marquee, it's like Nigel Ray's cash, isn't it? Or his family's cash, or whatever.
Yes,
or like
but
image rights deal, I don't know.
Yeah, so the image rights deal, but then you've got to be really careful, because the image rights that are linked to the club if it's linked to the club, it has to be within the cap. But you've got this murky deal, because we know from the was it the Dyson report, the Saracens salary cap investigation, that Maru was paid, I seem to remember, it was $900K for, say, I remember 25 or 30% of his image
something
rights,
like that.
Something like,
a steal.
Which now does seem like a steal. It seemed like a steal at the time. To be fair, Maru probably getting some bad advice on that.
But if Maru Itoje goes, I mean, I'm totally up for, just on the basis that we have no money, or that money is running short, and there's talk about, I think Exeter, the rumour club, who've had some payroll issue and haven't been able to pay.
Exeter have been late paying their players at least twice.
Right.
Mm. At least twice. And both times it's been down to like a bank problem.
Administrative issues.
I mean, it's never happened in my work. Ever happened in your work?
No.
Ever happened in your work?
No.
Yeah. So like you heard this from Worcester, didn't you? Oh, it's a bank. It's an administrative error. It just doesn't happen. It just does not happen. So I hope to God it is just an administrative error. I mean, I love Exeter and I want them to stay around for as long as possible. But that's really worrying.
But the broader point was, I'm totally happy if there are some very, very wealthy Frenchmen that want to pay these players.
This was my point years ago.
That's your point with Welsh as a Welsh fan.
Get rid of these players. Get them out of here.
Get them out of here.
Yeah, but then you've got to, as an England fan, you've got to say we've got to do something different with eligibility for England.
There will be a critical mass at which point it's unavoidable to not change the rules on.
Yeah.
On eligibility.
Well, we saw Joe Hawkins play today, didn't we?
Yeah.
For Exeter. He got man of the match. And he's not eligible for Wales, which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
That is crazy, considering Wales have even less money than the RFU.
And he took the Exeter deal when when they were all getting huddled into hotel rooms going, you may not have a job next year.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And not only that, they think that...
That is exceptional circumstances.
Before he got his cap, so it actually shouldn't matter. So he'd be an uncapped player. So anyway, farce. So Mauro is going to take a pay cut of £400,000.
If he stays at Saracens.
Yeah. And it'll be a real litmus test.
But, I mean, it'll be guaranteed to get like £250,000. That's probably market rate for him, though, isn't it? Market rate in England.
Let's just
say he won't get any more than that in England.
Let's take the Mauro brand out of this, right? Let's just not call him Mauro. Let's make him look like Charlie Yules, right? So it's Charlie Yules that plays like Mauro Itoje. No, go on better.
Who's
Beaumont? Beaumont, but plays like
who's the next best lock in England? Because you're comparing him to guys.
Johnny Hill.
I'm just saying, like, if Mauro played like Mauro, what would you pay him? But he wasn't Mauro.
Yeah.
Well, there's a distinction to be drawn. If Mauro played like Mauro has done for the last year and a half, up before the World Cup. And then isn't it interesting? I'm not. There could be a relationship between a contract running out and suddenly he's playing really well again.
Actually being hit in the pocket is a good way to incentivize you to give your all, training and otherwise.
Yeah. So I don't even think it's worth 400,000 in today's climate.
With a 5 million salary cap, I wouldn't spend that much on him.
Because if he was on... So,
he's worth whatever he can get, and fair play to him. Yeah, get whatever you can.
But to another Premiership club, so he probably is worth, let's just say, 400K. He probably is. But the problem is, for him to get paid any more than that, he can't be a marquee player anywhere else than Saracens.
Yeah.
He is, according to reports, not going to be a marquee player at Saracens. Therefore, you're asking a team to take 10% of their whole playing budget for one player.
Yeah,
who's not outside the salary cap. Therefore, no one is worth that.
And
there's not a player in the league who's
not
worth that in current market.
Either. That's the other thing. He's more of a flanker.
He's a very, very good player. But,
very good player.
But he's not, you're right, he's not like a Will Skelton.
So Will Skelton,
size.
And Etzebeth.
There's only a handful.
There's a handful of guys that I'd pay £400K for. Mauro's not one.
Yeah,
because he doesn't have unusual size. He does have unusual power and unusual
athleticism and his ability.
His
ability to read the game.
Yeah. But like, that's not rare, is it?
Hard work is not rare.
Hard work's not rare.
His combination of athleticism, ability to read the game in both in line-out setups, in defence,
and
in attack,
raw physical attributes as well.
Yeah. He's an exceptional player, but no player is worth 500K in England.
Very few.
He could be worth more than that in France. He'd look damn fine in my beloved Bordeaux's jersey.
He'd look very fine at Racing.
He'd look fine anyway. Racing
would really suit him. Racing.
La Rochelle. Yeah. Racing would really suit him, actually, right?
It'd be perfect. That's just the perfect match.
Yeah. Racing is the best match.
Yes, I like that idea. It would just be interesting to see if all the Saracens' loyalty does actually shine through.
It has for a lot of players. I strongly believe it is.
Stay. I wonder if they switch this around. And I wonder if Saracens are thinking this. Or are they just saying, right, we're keeping Owen because he's Owen, and that's the decision done. Or I wonder if they're going to be a bit more, selling them both out. Look, if you had 400K, would you stay? Would you stay? And then just give it to the one who says they wouldn't.
Faz is captain of England.
Yeah.
Tough if.
Well, who would you if you had to? We'd probably agree. Mate, we wouldn't spend that amount of money on either necessarily.
No, I wouldn't.
But if you had to spend your money, on one player, who would you spend your money on?
Oh, those two? Reluctantly, I'd have to say Farrell.
I'd say Farrell in a heartbeat.
I would as well.
I mean, if it was Farrell or, say, Will Skelton, who actually was at Saracens.
He was at Saracens.
I would give it to Will Skelton.
Well, Will Skelton is almost... There are three Will Skeltons.
Yeah.
Mind you, there's only... now Johnny Sexton has retired. Of the kind of fly half who will control the game in the same way, there's only a handful of those guys.
Yeah, I was going to say...
Pollard being one of them.
Two Saracens, if everyone was suddenly available and you could let Owen Farrell's contract expire and fill that marquee spot with someone else.
Yeah.
Who would take that?
I think they'd be quite smart about it. I don't think it'd be necessarily someone that you think of now. It wouldn't be a Pollard.
I was going to say, like, Eben Etzebeth would be the kind
of... Oh, right, sorry. Yeah. Like,
if everyone was suddenly available and you could let Owen Farrell's contract expire and use that marquee spot for anyone, who would the guys that would be on your shopping list of potential candidates... And that you would take instead of
Peter Steptoe.
Peter Steptoe is a good shout.
Yes.
I wonder about him week to week to week, because it's interesting he's playing in Japan. He's had a very serious injury. He's playing in Japan, and as a result, the number of games he actually plays in a year has gone down dramatically, which I think is fantastic for him.
For him and eking out extra years on his career with his 60-year-old hamstring tendon.
If it wasn't Peter Steptoe, Ardie Surveyor might be quite high up on my list. But again, not unusual enough.
And Ardie Surveyor, so you've got...
Whitelock or Retallack.
But you'd take a lock over a 10? Because this is... Why then would you... You just said a minute ago that you would...
Because he's not the right lock.
You would let Itoji go, but...
Yeah,
he's not the right lock.
It's the tight head lock. They're so unique, the tight head lock. So, like... What's the boy at Toulouse? Is it Miaf?
Emmanuel Mayafu.
Mayafu, yeah.
Now a French citizen.
Yes. Yep. Him, Will Skelton, Etzebeth.
The other French guy, South African.
Paul Valemsa.
Yeah.
Who's been injured too frequently recently.
Owini Antonio, he's apparently having a U-turn and playing for France again.
Who is he?
Yeah. I just remembered he used to play lock.
Yep. He did, actually. Those are the guys that I spend $400,000 on. But there's
not many of them.
I think you'd struggle to get those guys for 400K.
I wouldn't go for a winger. I wouldn't swap Owen Farrell for a winger.
No.
Nope.
Of outstanding physical specimens, someone like Rico Ioane is absolutely exceptional. Or Ardie Sveer that you mentioned before. But how Ardie Sveer is better than Ben Earl and Andy Christie.
Yeah.
But he's not two or three times their salary better than those guys.
He's not... completely different to them either, isn't
he? No, he's a Kiwi version of Lewis Ludlam.
Yeah.
And Lewis Ludlam is a superb player. Ben Earl is a superb player.
He's off to Toulouse.
Do you know what I think?
Toulon.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I think the reason I had that conversation is because, yes, there are players you might go, I might take that one, but I think it actually, that's a reverse way of basically going, bloody hell, Owen Farrell's a good player. Because there's not many people that I would... I would swap that marquee spot for. I mean,
There's also other factors involved. Like, he knows the system. He probably built the system.
Yeah.
He's valuable to their fans. I mean, we were talking about Exeter, weren't we, the other day? Being an Exeter fan is difficult because all the lads that you know, grown up with, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And that's really, really difficult. So, actually, Owen Farrell is worth a lot of money to somebody else, but probably nowhere near as much as he is worth to Saracens.
Yeah, that's
and right. The fabric of that team.
Yeah.
The other one would be a world-class tight head prop, which we mentioned, Uini Antonio.
Talking about
Ty Furlong, Franz Malherbe, someone of that ilk. And then, because again, you can name on one hand the real world class.
You can remember as well, can't you, like how influential a loose head prop was, like for
Oxnishi.
Yeah, or for Leicester when Iotsa was in his prime.
Yeah.
It made a huge difference that they could have Iotsa or they could have Castro Giovanni when he was. Going great guns. I mean, it made a huge difference.
Yeah. So yes, someone like that who is unique.
Yeah.
And there's a big drop off. So like from Franz Malherbe to the next best tight head from a scrummaging perspective, there is a bit of a drop off. Just ask Kyle Sinclair.
Who was the one that I absolutely loved? And he's fallen off the face of the earth a bit. He used to play for La Rochelle. Looks like an absolute superhero. Went to Lyon. He's got the beard. Black guy.
Danny Prizzo,
unreal.
So he's a loose head, isn't he?
Yeah, unreal.
Yeah, it's the one player that I thought was going to take Owini Antonio's mantle and obviously it hasn't come to fruition, which is why Fabien Galthié is like, please don't retire yet, is Demba Bamba.
Yes.
Yeah, good try. I bet he's still quite young, because he came through age 20.
Yeah, he did make the French World Cup squad when someone pulled out.
Did he?
Yeah,
he did. Called up.
He is at Lyon, I think.
Demba Bamba is currently at Lyon, and he is... Oh, my goodness, he's only 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, Phil.
So, yeah, he broke through age. I'm sure he's 20 or 21 when he kind of broke through.
Oh, he's got plenty of time.
And who was the other guy?
Oh, he's got 10 years.
And there's an eight that played at the same time, Patrick something. And he hasn't really made the French team, or I've never heard of him since, actually. I'm sure if you watch French rugby, you'll know him. But
The one who never kicked on, who was supreme, was Jordan Joseph.
Rassing. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
And he was playing for the French under-20s, age 18, which is some going, because the French under-20s is a hell of a team.
Yeah, he is 23 currently and playing at Rassing. Started at the weekend... in the Paris Derby, which they won away from home at Stade Francais. Joe March and Stade Francais. Henry Amador was on the bench for Racing for that one.
Yeah. Mm.
So, who shall we talk about next? What else was a good game? The Exeter game was class.
The Exeter game was class. Friday night game, Bath Bristol was. It was hell of a game. Not always the highest skill levels, and not least of which because they were. 80% of the kicks in the final 25 minutes were missed. There was three missed kicks from Sheedy and one from Finn Russell, and one successful from Finn Russell to close out the game.
Yeah,
I love the fact that all the narratives are being like Finn Russell's. And I get it. What a star to have in the Premiership, which is fantastic. But I love when I read the, because I'd watched the game and then I read the report and it said Finn Russell seals victory with kick. They sort of made everything about Finn Russell. I was like,
he was good.
He was good, but his kick from in front of the posts
that he fluffed.
It wasn't quite.
I thought Bath were going to win this by 20 points, 10 to 20 points. About 30 minutes in. But a good tell for which way a game is going to go is how much pressure has the opposition absorbed without conceding a point. So Bath looked like dynamite. I tell you what, Lawrence first half was superb.
Ollie Lawrence's highlights that first half are amazing. He was so good.
He was great.
The break for the Ben Spencer try, hit the line for his try, the break down the right-hand wing for, I think it led to his try, were all phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean... The second best player on that field, first half, was... why can I not remember names today? outside centre, who is French, who plays for...
Vakatawa,
thank you. He was also superb.
He made some lovely breaks.
I wonder what happens to him, because he retired because he was not fit to play. Well, I have news for you. He's playing lovely rugby.
I think it was an insurance thing in France. Because he had a heart issue... In France, they refused to insure him, and he went and had independent checks in the UK and has got insurance in the UK to play, which probably the stance from the French authorities remains. French authorities and or insurance companies.
So France could not play him?
Yeah.
Imagine if he is around for the next World Cup. I mean, he's 32-ish now, isn't he?
Yeah, he might be 31, 32. So.
But he could do a job for, I don't know, Fiji.
Fiji, perhaps.
Going back to Bath, one of the things I quite like, and I guess it's no surprise, Finn Russell gets in and you let the boys play, but Johan van Graan, who's generally, in his coaching tenure, has been quite a rigid, structured...
Yeah, pragmatist.
Pragmatist. He's actually letting the boys play.
Well, you don't have a choice, do you?
No, exactly. You sign Finn Russell, you let the boys play.
Yeah, so I think Bobby Robson's book talks about how he... how his star player was paid like six times more than him, which is Romero at the time. Like, you can't not do what he says. You know, you can't keep that guy on the bench because that's where the money is. So once Van Graan was told that he had to have Finn Russell, everything he planned probably is out the window.
Finn Russell said that Johan van Graan is the man that sold Bath to him.
Well, there we go. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But they are playing. They're playing okay. They're playing again. And that back line is delicious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Finn Russell, Redpath, who I'm a fan of, Lawrence, who is... I mean, and to transition away from... I mean, I think that back line is almost as good as when they're in their prime with Ford, Eastmond and Joseph. It's that good.
And with Ajomo as well.
Ajomo, what a beast.
Who's lovely.
What a beast.
Yeah. Well, you get the good and the bad with Finn. You get some amazing bits and pieces. You get the miss kick in front of the sticks. You get the intercept, which nearly cost the game.
I was going to say, I'll dovetail back again. And in a premiership, who would you have as your 10 if you could only have Russell or Farrell?
Russell. It's not close for me.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because of what exactly what Phil just said.
Yeah,
there's things that only he can do, but then there's the bar at both ends is both higher and lower.
Don't die wondering.
Yeah.
Bath will not this year.
No, they're not.
But that Malin's try, the intercept that led to the Malin's try, that nearly won the game for Bristol.
Mm. Yeah, it was...
And you do get both ends of the spectrum.
That was a great try as well.
Oh, it was lovely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I want to give Bristol some credit because I don't like doing this, but they did seem to adjust their game plan to shut down Bath's midfield. So Bath's midfield were running riots first half. And second half, you just didn't see them.
Mm.
And I tell you what, a player that I'm very suspicious of at the moment, and I'm sure I said this last week, but I was watching Barbary again this week. I think his card is marked. I don't see what the fuss is about now. I saw it as a kid. And
he's had some serious injuries, hasn't he?
But do you know what worries me about him? He doesn't look well conditioned. And you'd think after an injury you'd be in the best shape of your life. That's a worrying part.
Yeah, but if it's a knee injury, and then it's, well, are you back fully back up to speed? Like, if you have got a knee injury, you can't properly train.
No, you can't do the same conditioning.
You can do boxing conditioning, but you can't do...
Yeah, I want to say conditioning. I mean, he just looks heavy.
Yeah, he does.
I mean?
He does look heavy. Look, he looks like he should be playing front row.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember. Yeah, it seems a long time ago that every time he was on the pitch, he was just the catalyst for things happening.
Yeah, he's got the build of someone who is like a really good level 5 player. I don't say that as like... Well, yeah, I guess it is an insult. That's what he looks like to me. He's a really good level 5 player.
Two other bits to mention this game. One, is this the fourth Rich Lane, or Callum Sheedy to Rich Lane crossfield kick of the season, which they are using to great effect? I like Rich Lane as well.
Where's he from? Is he Coventry or something?
He was...
Bedford?
Yeah, he was... Championship.
And championship.
We need to talk about the championship in a bit.
Yes, we do. That's why I was going to bring that up. Thank you, Phil.
The other thing, first half, Bristol made a great break. It went down the right and they quickly spun it left. Piers O'Connor and I'm not even sure who was on the wing had a 2-on-2, but two Bath defenders went to Piers O'Connor, which meant there was... It might have been Rich Lane, actually, in the corner. And Piers O'Connor didn't give the pass and tried to run over two men 5 yards from Bath's line. That was... It's one of the most blatant butchered tries that I've seen for a long, long time.
Piers O'Connor, who just not seen enough of recent years, actually.
No, and we actually saw him. He did very well to get involved in the game from the wing.
Yeah, I thought he did all right.
There was some good and bad. He made some good carries. He got stuck in. He missed Lawrence for Lawrence's try. He fell off him when Lawrence kind of cut back against the grain. And that 2-on-1, or it was a 2-on-2, but it was effectively a 2-on-1, was such a bad miss.
Tell you what fills my heart with joy. Absolutely fills it with joy.
I know what you're going to say here. Well,
Bristol losing, and losing with the last player of the game being Ellis Genge, pleading with the ref that it wasn't a knock-on. I mean, it was just awesome to watch. Sir, honestly, would I lie to you? It's not gone back. Yes, it has gone forward. Game over. It was glorious. Panning over to Pat Lam. I was watching, just waiting for Pat Lam's interview. Couldn't wait for it.
Oh, fair play, Bath.
Yeah, fair play. I reckon, before we talk about any specific games, there have been some other stories. I was reading the rugby paper earlier and it made me wonder if I reckon Rob Baxter listens to this podcast.
Of course he does.
not because what he's saying is something we've said, but just because I reckon his values and his view of the game chimes with ours.
Because our listenership is a compact, well, it's not that compact at all, actually, but influential bunch.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes.
That is definitely true.
And Rob Baxter, in a quote, was just, his basic thrust was, it was a really interesting article, but... The headline just says Baxter, focus on the good stuff. And Rob Baxter is basically making the point in this, just how much negativity is there in the press and from all the people within rugby And he's basically making the point that you always say, Jimmy, it's not hard to sell this if you just sell this. He said, quote, "We need to stop and focus on the quality of rugby being played, which is fantastic. Loads of good young players playing great rugby. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm talking as a game, not just premiership teams, the RFU, reporters, television companies. There's a lot we can do that will encourage people to come to matches." He's basically saying the general negativity, blah, 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 the general negativity around means we need to become more aligned, and that will help generate the positivity that the game needs. He's talking about the attendances at Exeter. We were only referencing the potential. We don't know if there's any financial issues, but attendances generally are down. They've got three games fewer, two fewer home games, three fewer home games
a
season,
which could cost them £1 million of revenue.
Exactly, and less expectation of reaching the knockout stages of Europe. So it's a massive issue for these clubs, and Rob Baxter's general point is, for God's sake, there's so much good stuff to talk about. Stop talking about all the negative stuff. It's not needed. And dovetailing into that, unless you wanted to...
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for highlighting Piers O'Connor's blown chance in the corner.
Just, isn't it bad timing for the director of rugby at Exeter
to be saying that?
Saying this, well, when we know what's going to come down the line, which we'll be talking about later, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Stick a pin in that. Stick a pin in that.
We'll definitely touch on that.
The Championship have unanimously rejected the RFU's plan to turn it into a Premiership 2 franchise league, which is a pretty big blow for RFU chief exec Bill Sweeney.
And resign.
His chances of delivering his 8-year professional game partnership. So the 11 clubs have got together and... I've come back to the RFU and said that unanimously they're not on board with the RFU's plans. They've got major questions, a number of them. They don't like the franchise element where they can be just jettisoned or brought in on the basis of non-rugby meritocracy. They don't believe or aren't convinced that there's actually going to be promotion relegation to the Premiership.
Yep.
And those are just a couple of a number of issues that they have.
Yeah, they want it to be the top. This is a direct quote. They want the Championship to be at the top of the competitive pyramid of England, open to all clubs who have the ability, aspiration and ambition to compete in it. So they're saying that, by inference, you can say that the Premiership is not, and in this future model, will not be that. It will not be open to all.
Yeah. Be careful with the Championship, because I've got a feeling one day it will be the highest level of rugby in England. I really think that. The Premiership, it feels this weekend like it's ticking over nicely. The games were great to watch. And it's sometimes easy to forget the underlying systemic problems that it has. But they still exist. And when they come to fruition, which they inevitably will in the next 3 or 4 years, the Championship will still be there. And if it's sustainable, even with small squads, if they're just, you know, if they can just hang on in there, there could be a bright future for them.
So, yeah. So, Bill Sweeney's saying English rugby's on the cusp of something quite spectacular.
Thanks, Bill.
Just a related story, because we mentioned the... if you have three fewer home games per year, that could cost you as much as £1 million. It could cost you even more than that, potentially. But it's in that region. Mm-hmm. It's close to a seven-figure sum for most clubs. Did you see there was the Leicester Tigers accounts were published last week, I think? Did you see anything from that?
No.
Because there was two, I didn't go into it in much detail, but two things I noticed. One, I think it was about £1.5 million Leicester lost last year, which is...
Yes, I saw that there's been more money injected by the owners.
Yeah, which is not that surprising. It's broadly consistent with most of the teams in the league at the moment.
Yeah.
So you've got to have owners willing to throw £1+ million onto the fire.
If they're only putting £1 million in, that's pretty good for a Premiership rugby team.
Well... the other thing of interest was there was £1 million exactly of, I can't remember how they phrased it in the reports, but let's say unanticipated revenue in that period.
Oh, I know where this might be.
Yes, which it didn't state from what I read what that was, but I think we all know what that was.
Yeah.
A certain buyout of certain individuals' Leicester contracts, namely Borthwick, Sinfield and Walters.
Yes.
So, yes. So it would have been a 2.5 million, but you'd have to be contributing 2.5 million had you not got...
2.5 million in your taxed income. Oh.
Had you not got £1 million from the RFU for your coaches.
Yeah, it's a hell of an amount of money to pay for a hobby.
And that is the club who has the biggest capacity ground and generally the highest attendances across the year.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah. And they can't make money. They can't make money.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not in a good position.
I wonder where the £22 million per year is going to come from the women's game then. It's mainly coming from the owners, so I guess dig a bit deeper.
The RFU said sponsorship deals was going to make up...
That's right, yeah.
150 million of the 220 over the 10 years, something like that.
That sounds... I've got no reason to question that will come to fruition.
Can't wait for it. It's going to be a great day. this thing happened this week. Oh, one of the female players didn't get boots. Did you see that story?
Okay.
No, I didn't see that story.
That was a Twitter story this week.
Is that a story?
Oh yeah, it was huge on Twitter this week.
I'm so glad I don't spend time on Twitter.
Do you know, these stories find me. I'm not on Twitter, but I got a screenshot of this Twitter meltdown.
All I do is go on and check DMs from time to time.
Has our Twitter account changed? Someone told me the other day that our Twitter account is now my Twitter account.
I think I may have changed it to your name when you were tweeting some stuff.
But I'm not tweeting for like 6 months.
No, but it might have been done 6 months ago. Hmm. I think it might have been at a time when I'm like, do you know what? Rather than have an argument, let me just make it absolutely clear. This is JB saying this, not me.
I don't even have the password for it.
Okay, well, I'm sure we can sort that. No, I go on every now and again to check the DMs, and again, preempting some of the conversation we may have later in the podcast, the rugby community are amazing, and I got a DM earlier from a chap who, and this rugby's like this, and we get this all the time. He's just gone, I heard you say on you might be going to South Africa in the summer to watch the island tour. If you're there, I've got a place. I've got a place in Cape Town. You're more than welcome. I'll put you up.
Amazing.
All the rest. It's like
we've got a new listener in Canada who I'm linked to on LinkedIn. We've also got someone very influential. I won't mention the company.
Well, yeah. Well, the person that got in touch with me, I'll tell you, like his job. It's like I'd quite like to come to your place in Cape Town. So it'd be nice.
We've got a brand new friend in Toronto, Canada. Which sounds awesome if you want to go watch some rugby there. And also we've got a listener who came back to me about something I said about a deal, and they are in charge of, well, a very major institution, to say that no, that what you said about the deal isn't correct. We're not involved in that. So yeah, there's we've got all sorts of people out there.
Well, it's some proper substance among the audience, isn't it? It's fantastic. Yeah. And as always, don't feel intimidated to get in touch with an email.
Follow us on LinkedIn too, because I put quite a lot of stuff
there. Jonathan Beardmore on LinkedIn, and contactheadchasers@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Love to hear from you. Got some more great emails this week.
And I am using Twitter at the moment, but only to view and review the Sam Altman memes, because they are
tell me the story.
They're on fire at the moment.
I know he got ousted, and now he's back from his job.
Yeah.
What, he's back?
Yeah.
So yesterday or Friday, he got fired from... So this is the CEO and one of the founders of OpenAI, which is the company behind ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And others. I think OpenAI or ChatGPT is the software behind Bard, which is Bing's. So Google funds it. Sorry, not Google. Microsoft funds it. So a very, very big player in that world. And we were just talking about AI last week, actually. So he got fired by the board. His co-founders all seemed to rally behind him and quit a lot at the same time, basically tearing apart the functional leadership that sits adjacent to or underneath the board. And then the board seemed to have done a U-turn and are now realising the error of their ways and are bringing him back. So
wow.
But there's been some spicy and very funny memes associated with that.
So sometimes an event just attracts memes, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
What's the one which I absolutely loved? Can't remember. It'll come back to me.
Do you know what? One thing I was tracking, and again, it's disappointing to say this, bearing in mind something we will go on and talk about later in the podcast, but the level of interaction on rugby on Twitter is just like on the actual substantive rugby on the pitch is like just.
It's not there for rugby,
is it? It's just not there. It's not there unless there's a big flare up talking point that's got nothing to do with rugby but is just tangentially associated with rugby, and then it will go off, as we will talk about later. But the actual rugby itself, people aren't talking about it.
There's lots of people who want to sell the greatest investment opportunity the world's ever seen.
Oh yeah, what would that be? But
other than that, not much.
We've only had some spare cash to put.
That should be, what was the South African franchise that was owned by a guy who had the greatest company in the world limited?
Yeah.
They should do that. They should call it the greatest investment opportunity in the world.
I tell you what.
That was the Southern Kings, I think.
Southern Kings.
Based out of PE, Port Elizabeth.
Somebody has sent me a video of Grift Nation's like promotional it's like a documentary. It must last like 15 minutes of Grift Nation doing their thing.
This is Rock Nation, Mario Itoji and the Beast and others publicity company.
Yes.
Which is owned by Jay-Z.
Yes, so Jay-Z is like the overall owner, and then there's a guy, what is his name? Michael. Oh, come back to me in a minute.
Oh, I don't know.
Incredibly snappy dresser. But he's so cringeworthy.
Like from what? Sorry, say again. Go back.
Rock Nation.
The guy who heads Grift Nation UK. What on earth is his name?
Grift Nation.
It's anyway. You've got to see this video. It is. What is his name?
Doesn't matter. Anyway.
You've got to watch this video. The guy's like mid-50s, and he deals with professional athletes. So it's sort of it's cataloging his day. And like he starts his day at 6 a.m. with a workout. Nothing wrong with that. We all do that. It's not particularly special. But he's working out. He's like, yeah, because I deal with professional athletes, I've got to be a professional athlete. It is one of the most cringeworthy things you've ever seen. And then they do like this leadership conference and they're following him.
It's a good job, by the way, like prison guards. Don't do that.
I work with criminals, therefore I must be a criminal. And by the way, if you're a rugby player, you don't want to be represented by another rugby player. That's the last person you want representing you. That's why you pay somebody else.
I want a lawyer.
Michael Yormark.
I've just found him, Michael Yormark.
I love his dress sense.
Yormark.
His dress sense is incredible.
It's snappy.
On videos, there was a message that came through on one of the Broughton Park Youth Rugby Collective groups, and I had a little bit of took a deep breath before I hit play on a video that we got sent, because I was expecting... Oh, here we go. Anyway, it's basically our club are signing up to be part of the Star Scheme.
Scheme and Hutch.
Star, very good. Names a person in our club. We'll be delivering a presentation in the clubhouse next Sunday, the 26th at 12:30 p.m. You're all invited, blah, 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 blah. The aims are to increase participation in the mini and junior section, offer training, blah, all that sort of stuff. I click press play on the video, and the face you were just pulling, you're pulling now, is the face that I was pulling as I pressed play. I was like, oh, what's this going to be? But basically, it's this little scheme that's been started from the grassroots up by Chew Valley Rugby Club in Bristol. And it's like a breath of fresh air, Jay, honestly. They're basically saying that they have this little video, and it's from the point of view of they have a little bit with a coach, a little bit with a player, a little bit with a mum. And the point they're making is, if you've had a bit of a rough start, or if you've got a bit of aggression as a young lad and you want to get it out, and if you want to channel it in the right place and in the right way, and if you want to have a place where you might have positive male role models, all of those sorts of things, because this is, I've worked in Bristol for a bit, and you know Bristol.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some rough kids. Like this would be like, you know, they chat to one lad who's kind of like, had family that were in trouble with the law and stuff. Like, you can sort of see that, oh, this is like Ellis Genge.
Yeah.
Again, and they're actually saying it was like making a case for rugby for all of the positive things. Going back to Rob Baxter says, it's like, if rugby can be an amazing out, it was just saying all the positive things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That weren't all the tick boxy stuff. It was great.
I see that.
It was great.
Yeah.
Well, what's it called again?
A Star Scheme.
Oh, interesting.
And Hutch.
And Hutch.
Yeah. And if you listen to Genge talking about exactly that stuff, he's a very good advocate for rugby, the positive side of rugby.
That's when he's at his most compelling.
100%. Yeah.
Back to my
not when he's appealing for not a knock on at the end of a game.
Yeah,
when he
I
it
love that
anyway.
With his little cry face. Not a knock on, sir. Honestly, So Michael, back to Michael Yormack, right? So his central claim to why he's so invested in rugby is Sia Khaleesi. This is a central claim. Mm. He claims he knew nothing about the game until one day he turned on the World Cup in Japan and saw Sia Khaleesi play the game, and then from that point he was hooked. Now, this to me sounds like a
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Little bit of a lie, because if you watched South Africa, Sia Khaleesi is a fine player, but he does not stand out for South Africa.
No.
If you're watching, right?
Unless this man, he's never watched the game, but he happens to be like an intricate rook specialist, despite never watching the game. That's maybe like, Khaleesi.
It wasn't Cheslin Kolbe, no? No, that's not the guy, no?
And not Dialandi.
No, not him.
And not Faf.
Yeah, not Faf. Not that guy. He stands out like a mile.
Yeah, and not Etzebeth.
Or Peter Seftetoy.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone who's ever watched rugby in their life can see this collection of players. I think, I think Sia Khaleesi would be number... You probably wouldn't know...
Well, in the...
Fifth bottom.
Yeah, in the 23. Because, like, guys coming off the bench, like, Quagga Smith is... Yeah. Oxnishi coming off the bench.
Inspired by Khaleesi... But you've not noticed Quagga Smith. You're mental.
Well, yeah.
You're mental.
Yeah, if he'd come up with a reason that he's like, do you know, if he just used statistically and said the difference between a South Africa team, how a South Africa team with Sia Khaleesi in squad plays and without him.
Yeah.
That would be an objective point, like, which you cannot argue with.
The guy's clearly, I mean, that has to be a lie, doesn't it? It has to be a lie. I've watched rugby many, many years. And like, he's never stood out to me as the main man on a field, on any field.
But you listen to him, like, we had the pleasure of talking to him in Monaco, and like things like when one of the warm-up games that was held in Twickenham, South Africa versus New Zealand, and Sia Khaleesi was getting interviewed after the game, after South Africa had handily beaten New Zealand, and he couldn't speak for the first minute because the whole crowd was applauding him.
Yeah.
And you listen to him talk and you see what he does. All of that stuff, absolutely.
But
I do agree. That's
not after. In Japan, is it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, you got.
I'm with you.
Watch this video. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh dear.
We were going to talk about another game.
We're not really talking about Exeter yet.
Exeter Bristol. Exeter Gloucester.
Gloucester. Yeah.
How would the Gloucester throw this away?
I know. This was an interesting game because I thought Exeter come out the blocks well. But Gloucester in that second half, it was there. They scored a couple of cracking tries.
There was some proper balling going on, wasn't
there? Oh, it was lovely.
Yeah, offloads all over the shop.
And the Lewis Rees-Sammet try and the Ollie Thorley try, two superb finishes.
Lewis Rees-Sammet could be going to Bordeaux next year. Bordeaux and Montpellier are in a bit of a tug of war for him.
I was thinking when he scored that try, how long is this guy staying in the Premiership? It can't be that long.
Well, staying at Gloucester
and
as well.
And again, Itoje is to Lyon. That's the favourite destination at this point.
You'd also look good in a Lyon.
That doesn't make much sense to me, Jan.
But are you thinking about, like, because have you thought more about your French team?
I think it's going to have to be Racing, and that's boring. But I just feel that they have... I can't...
We are going to see him in January.
Yeah, the problem is, like, I can't really support...
I really want to go and see Racing.
Can me and Stuart Lancaster be friends? Like, I respect the man, but can I really buy into his team? Are those my values? No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're not my values.
You can't do that
to
yourself.
They had a very gritty win in the Paris Derby at the weekend yesterday.
Do you know who does have my values? Bruno Gara.
La Rochelle.
Big men running down the middle of the park.
You can get flights to La Rochelle most of the year, just not in the
winter.
Not in winter.
Brilliant.
Basically.
Not when all the good stuff's happening.
La Rochelle are currently 25-21 up at home against my beloved Bordeaux. Although Bordeaux have thrown it away. Bordeaux were 21-8 up and two converted tries in the last 25 minutes mean that La Rochelle are currently winning.
Well, the lineup.
And Bordeaux with Damien Penaud scoring tries for Bordeaux.
Oh, nice.
Clermont.
Oh, yeah, Damien Penaud. Yeah. That's weird.
It is weird seeing
Penaud. I imagine Penaud and Zamit. Oh, that's pretty sexy.
It is, isn't it? French League's something. French League is something. Yeah, I'm going to have some more. If only Ronan Agora could move to Paris, that would work for me.
Oh, that La Rochelle back line.
Go on.
With Kerbala, Hastoy, who is class, Donti and Uge Sotini in the centre, the Samoan outside centre, Teddy Thomas and Jack Knoll on the wings, and Bryce Doolan at 15.
The flankers, Boudon and Bottier. Oh,
yeah.
Mate, what Bugarit, a team.
Bugarit, Antonio and Wardy in the front row.
That's quite nice, isn't it? It's quite nice. It's quite nice.
Yes.
Makes you feel warm inside, doesn't it?
Oh, so, come on, Bordeaux.
Yeah, so
8 minutes left.
We could have a little trip to a cognac.
But do I really like the kit of
cognac distillery?
La Rochelle? La Rochelle's kit is
awesome. Oh, it's very French, with all the sponsors.
So, do you remember George Worth?
George Worth, Leicester.
Yeah, George Worth. Do you want to know something interesting about George Worth?
Always.
I'm pretty sure George Worth is...
I was only thinking earlier.
I'm pretty certain George Worth is related somehow to 666 Casino fame, wealth. Like, I'm certain he is. Anyway, he's training to be what was he training to be? Something in finance.
He had a great moustache, if I remember. I remember him having a great moustache. He grew a really great moustache before George Furbank.
Yeah. Well, he is now playing in France, and there's a picture of him in his LinkedIn in his French kit, and it is such a French kit. So it's white with little red dots on it, but then peppered with tiny little sponsors.
Yeah.
I love it. It looks so cool.
The sponsorship is very French.
Yeah.
Unless you're Racing.
Yes. Oh, love it. Anyway, what were we talking?
So, Exeter.
Exeter, Gloucester. Rob Baxter, he seems to have magicked up a team from out of nothing, really. Out of nothing. It's remarkable. And I think the big difference between Gloucester... There are certain teams now in the Premiership which you can divide into teams that want to play everything. Gloucester's definitely one of them. They just want to play all of the time. Same as Northampton. And teams that just want to carry everything hard. Exeter carry ridiculously hard. Mm-hmm. That's what... You know, that is the whole ethos of what they do. Get over the line a little bit at a time. But for them to... I think this is their 11th win, is it? In a row at Sandy Park?
They've not lost... in over a year now.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Certainly in the Premiership. I'm not sure if that reflects in Europe as well.
Yeah, to rebuild the entire team, I think, is a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
And to win games like this as well.
With the final kick of the game.
Yeah.
Which when Slady was... He really took his time on that penalty. Because if he goes early and he misses, they've got time for a restart.
Yes, they have.
But he just had to hit it because he let the clock run down and he had to get it because it's game over if he misses that.
George Barton looks very handy at 10.
He did. It's probably one of the better games I've seen. The guy that stood out for me, though, for Gloucester, who I think probably would have been man of the match had Gloucester have won, was Jack Clement.
Yes, he's a big boy, isn't he?
He is a big boy.
He, I was watching him carry, I was like, oof.
Because I remember seeing him last year. Yeah, he is thicker. So he's only 22. He's 6'4 and listed as 107 kg. I'm sure he's more than that now.
Yeah, he is.
He's more than that now. He is a big, strong boy. Or 6'3, sorry. But 107 kg. But he carried the ball. The line he cut for his try, and some of his running was super hard.
Yeah.
Really, really impressed with him.
I enjoy watching him. I enjoy watching Seb Atkinson. I've spoken about him a lot. I think he got himself a try too.
He did, although TNT Sports on the app badged it as Mark Atkinson, who scored. They're the same guy as Ultimate Rugby doing it.
Yeah. Are you anything to do with the broadcast setup at all anymore, Tim?
No.
Okay, good. Right, so why is Sam... I had a whinge a few weeks ago about female commentators, because on the analyst role, how would they know what it is like to play a single second of men's rugby? How would they know? They simply don't, and yet we have to listen to them analyse a men's World Cup game. Why is Sam Warburton on my TV talking about Bath versus Bristol? Sam Warburton, fine player, but he spent his whole career at Cardiff. He's never played a second of Premiership rugby. You know, same goes for him as it does for female analysts doing World Cup.
Brian Driscoll is on the coverage as well.
I don't want it. There are so many people that have played in that derby that know what it is. I mean, we had a new presenter, Sam Warburton, and someone else, and I can't remember exactly. I was just thinking, like, this is such a big game, a derby game. It's Topsy, a South African, a Welshman, and an Irish woman, when they were interviewing Van Gran at the end. So, like, I just think that you need people who have experienced that atmosphere, that occasion, have got some link with the club. And do you know when you hear, like, someone who really gets the occasion? It's like when you have Ben Kay and Austin Healey, which they shouldn't really work together when Leicester are playing, because
especially when they're with Nick Mullins,
yeah, and
who's
Nick
also
Mullins,
a Leicester fan.
Nick Mullins,
although he does well to hide it.
Yeah, you know, Nick Mullins describing how much it means when Leicester Tigers walk out to that music. You know he means that, and you know that Austin means it, and you know that they know what they're talking about. Sam has no idea what it is to play for Bath, and no idea what it is to play for Bristol.
So I think the two we just mentioned, Sam Warburton and Brenner Driscoll, are two of the best pundits.
They are brilliant. I'm not saying they're not brilliant.
I get the point on Derby Day, particularly like the East Midlands Derby or the Bristol Bath Derby. You should have one player from each side who has been in historical Derby matches.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that point for them.
I think they're probably really boring. Answer to the question is they have a contract with X number of days work. Because I remember it was in I did the 2015 year and I did a few games that year, but then it was the following season. It might have been in that season, 2015-16. I remember one of the first games I worked on was a quarter final. One of the early games I worked on was a quarter final of the European Cup, and I was working with Bod and Lawrence Delaney, and I was sat on the catering truck and I messaged my mum going, this is
bonkers.
What the hell is happening? He only used to do Champions Cup games.
Yes.
Mm. Which makes perfect sense.
It does make sense.
And it's the same with Sam Warburton. He was Champions Cup. Maybe they're just the number of days they've got is expanded. That might be to do with the fact that the
less games,
fewer games in Europe, and so they use them on the Premiership. I don't know, but that might be the boring reason why.
I think you're probably right.
But they are fantastic pundits. There's no question.
Yeah, but they are. But it's just not what I want. I love when Bayfield's at Northampton. You know, there's just loads of people.
What game was Flatman on? Was he on the Bath Bristol game?
Why not get Flatman?
Yeah.
There you go. Easy. Yeah. Easy. Yeah. Too easy.
Well, it's like there are certain things where I don't want unbiased commentary.
Yeah.
Like when I watch the Six Nations, I want bias. I want really partisan commentary. I want Jiffy and Brian Moore screaming into the microphones.
I'm not going to go that far.
Because it's what I've seen for years.
With the Derby weekend, they could have made, you're absolutely right, you could have made a massive feature of it. It's a derby weekend. There's 100 years of history. We know what this means. It's an, a go really partisan.
Who would be the player who was played for both Bristol and Bath?
Kevin Maggs. He's played for both.
Wow, I'd love them to get Kevin Maggs.
Joel Abt played for both.
Knowledge. These are great names, Tim.
Anyway, if you just took like an absolute stalwart Bristolian and an absolute stalwart
exactly,
and just have them like the two old men up in the thing in the Muppets.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Just go.
Like that is what Brian Moore and Jiffy are Jason, like.
Not Jason Little. Someone Little.
Jason Little was 12. He was like fly half 12.
Yeah, he was Bristol and Gloucester, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There must be another one.
Dave Atwood.
Dave Atwood, but he would be busy that day. I think he might be actually on the field.
But they could have got him this weekend.
Was he not playing?
No, he's retired now, isn't he?
No, I thought he went back to Bath.
He wasn't playing, was he? He wasn't.
Is he not retired and he's now doing his barrister training thing?
Oh, I thought he was still in the Bath squad. Was he with Bath last year?
I might be mistaken on that.
I'm sure he's gone back to Bath.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, he's not. He wasn't in the matchday squad this week.
Anyway. But yeah, just go partisan. Why not?
Yeah,
that would have been great this weekend.
That's what you
get
want.
Get Tom Wood for the Saints Leicester game.
Yeah.
Get Tom Wood and who would be an old Leicester captain that's now retired?
Tom Croft,
George Shooter.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many Leicester guys.
People that would have been in a dust up with each other.
Yeah. Tom Youngs and Mar Afu.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now you're talking.
Yes. Have you?
Yeah. That would be good. Tuilagi and Ashton.
Yes.
There's so many good combos. Sam Robinson's great. I'm not saying he's not a great analyst.
He is good.
But in the same way that I think some of the women are great analysts, but how they don't know what it is to be there.
You could argue by that token, he doesn't know what it's like to play in Champions Cup finals and stuff.
You know, there is a good point there. There is a good point.
If you were using that as your metric.
Do you know who I would love to see on our TV? Would be Johnny Sexton.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him do the Champions Cup, because he has actually won it. We do forget that he has had some success in the competition.
He's had a fair bit. Yeah, yeah.
But then he's also lost a lot as well, which we can't...
Four titles? Three or four titles himself?
Has he got that many?
Definitely two.
Two, I'd say.
2009 he was playing, wasn't it, when they beat Leicester?
Did they win back-to-back? No, not back-to-back.
Northampton.
Two in 3 years.
He got the North... He won against Northampton.
Yeah.
Did he beat Leicester?
I think he was playing... Was it 2009 when they beat Leicester? When it was Alessandro Tuilagi versus Shane Horgan on the wing.
That's a mismatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Horgan's... Yeah. He was considered a big,
Horgan,
strong boy.
But he was better than I gave credit for.
I love his sister. She's amazing.
She is amazing,
isn't she? And, like, so funny. Like, I love her because she's... Imagine the banter you'd have.
Yeah.
Imagine, just talk to me, say funny things.
He's very prominent, Shane Horgan, in Alistair Campbell's book.
Oh, really?
Is he?
Yeah, because apparently they got on really well, and they speak about politics all the time in the whatever tour it was, the tour of hell when they went to New Zealand.
Yeah, Sexton won in 2009. 1916 beat Leicester. Who was his opposite man that day? Wow. What's that question.
Who's opposite man?
So Sexton, 2009 final.
Against?
Leinster beat Leicester, 1916. Mm-hmm. Johnny Sexton starting fly half for
Andy Good.
Leinster. Yeah, who was his opposite man? Not Andy Good.
Austin Healy, I was going to go for.
In 2009?
Oh, yeah.
No. Austin Healy was, I think, long retired then.
Okay, so...
Leicester Tigers.
Let's just calm down. Let's everyone just take a breath. Just think about things.
Just relax.
Who would be a 10 for Leicester at that time? Toby Flood.
Nope.
Taulupe Flood. No.
No.
Who? Okay.
But yeah, Flood must have. He might not have even gone to Leicester at that point. He might have still been at Newcastle. But no. It's. This is a tough one.
No.
I'll give you a clue.
Go on.
So he is still involved in rugby in a coaching capacity.
Oh, is it the Aussie guy that became a coach?
He's not Aussie.
No. Still involved in a coaching
Hang on a second.
This is tough.
it's coming back to me. Did he wear a scrum hat?
No, he did not.
What?
No. He might have in one game, but I do not.
George Ford would have been around then. He would have been like a kid. So it's definitely not him.
It's not Ford. Oh, no, Ford would have been about coaching. Yeah, Ford would have been about 15 at that time.
No, no, he was in the first team squad in about that. About that.
Not just, not 2009.
He's like 30 now. He's like 20,
30 now.
30 now.
So 14 years ago. So he'd been 16.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
It's not George Ford, and I think George Ford was in 2011. He made his name. Doesn't begin with H.
Oh, I've got no idea.
Should I tell you some of the other back line and some of the players? So I'll read through the team. So Ayerza, we've already mentioned him, with George Shooter and Castro Giovanni.
Nice. Oh, what a front row.
Nice front row.
Tom Croft, Lewis Moody.
It was Tom Croft and Ben Kay in the second row.
Okay.
Love that.
In second row,
so that row will be Lewis Moody.
Martin Corey?
Moody was on the bench.
What? Wow.
No Corey.
So
Lewis Deacon was on the bench.
Thomas Waldron?
Back row. Two are...
Corey? No, he wasn't still playing then.
No. Back row's tough. I'll read it to you. So, Craig Newby.
Yeah.
Ben Woods.
No, we never got him.
Wow.
And Jordan Crane, who you probably would have got.
Yeah. I've got him eventually.
French number nine.
Oh, I can see the sideburns.
Yeah, yeah. The hair.
Oh, I can't remember. He went to Stade Francais.
Julien Dupuy.
Yep.
The 10 is who you're looking for. Wingers were Scott Hamilton and Alassana Tuilagi.
Scott Hamilton, was it two caps that Scott Hamilton got for New Zealand?
New Zealand.
Jordy Murphy will be the fullback.
Jordy Murphy was the fullback. Centres, Hipkiss and friend of the pod, Ayula Erinley.
Goodness me, that's a direct
sentence. I thought it would be Anthony Allen then. I was thinking.
Who was the fly half?
Coach.
Coach, yeah.
I think I've got it. I think I know it.
A coach?
He's still in the game. He's coaching.
I want to give it.
Paul Burke?
No.
No. He's still involved.
Jeremy Staunton?
No. I'm going to look at Phil. I'm on the right. He's still involved in coaching in the Premiership.
Yes, I think he is.
Yes.
Coaching in the Premiership?
Yes.
No. Dave.
It's... Is he coaching?
Oh, is it hound, stop. Is it? Is it Northampton's?
Yes.
Ah, what's his name? I can't remember.
Is it that guy?
I think it is.
Sam Vesti.
Sam Vesti.
Correct.
Sam Vesti played Sam 10 Vesti. In the final.
And he lost by 3 points. It's Dupuy, Julien Dupuy kicking sticks, though, rather than Vesti.
Wow. So who was on the bench? There must have been an injury that day. There's no way that was their starting 10.
Flood would have been their 10, surely, at that time.
Yeah, had he moved at that point? I think he probably had, hadn't he?
They wouldn't have had Vesti as their main starting 10, surely.
Let's have a look. Because it was after...
Well, Billy 12 Trees was probably around at that time. He would have been coming through.
No.
They didn't like him, though, did they? They formed off to Bedford.
Yeah. I think he would have been playing Championship at that time.
Mm. Interesting.
Isn't it? Excellent stuff. So,
nice.
Anyway, so Exeter did beat Gloucester, and that's the wrap up of that game after we
got. Yes. Toby Flood was there 2008, so Flood must have been injured.
So, we managed to summarise Exeter Gloucester by naming the 2009 reserve Leicester 10. So, obviously,
that's correct.
Stuff like that was the reason people tune in.
And we spent 10 minutes doing it.
What a waste of time.
Henry Slade, you absolute legend.
Yeah,
love it.
Well done. So, who's not a legend on today's naughty list is George Furbank. What a horrible first half he had.
Yeah.
I've only seen the highlights of that game.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
My word. They just peppered him with kicks.
Torrid. Absolutely torrid.
Drop the first one. Slice the second one. Just things that should never happen. That should never happen. Northampton. This league in general, you just don't know who's going to win what.
Well, I'd throw the positive on Leicester. They've got their players back. Pollard did exactly what you talked about Marcus Smith needing to do in games and just got his team in the right part of the pitch. Like you said, put some horrible kicks up on George Furbank.
Yep.
Just made it just hard work for Northampton to get anything, played territory and in rubbish conditions as well. That's exaggerated. And So I'd emphasise the positives there. It was a very workmanlike performance from Leicester.
Tom Pearson was anonymous this game. I was really disappointed by that. I thought he's going to have a good game against Rafael. I thought he was going to really show what he's all about, because he was really good last year. It's the point he nearly got into England.
Yeah, he was in the squad over the summer, wasn't he?
Yeah. I haven't seen the performance from him yet that I want to for Northampton, because I think he could be an absolute critical player for them. Mm. But it's just not really happening.
Yeah, I really liked him last year, and I was actually a bit surprised that he didn't do more with England, because he was released relatively early.
Yeah. He and Ben Earl were the two best back rows in England last year.
Yeah, probably fair. Two best English back rows in England, yeah.
Well, they both made the dream team, didn't they?
Yeah.
With the dream team.
Theo McFarlane being another, although he's injured for quite a lot of last year.
Yes, true.
Yeah, Leicester just seemed harder, smarter. That bit. The scrum was quite interesting. So, Waller looked like he had Hayes quite frequently, but then it sort of, turned into a lottery. Well, I think they've done really well getting Curtis Langdon. Sale missed a trick, not keeping him.
Well, did he get away with it on a high shot? Some people, some fans were unhappy.
There was a high shot. Was this on Friday or was it on?
No, it was in that game.
And did it ride up? It looked.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I was kind of like, yeah, fine, great, good.
Yeah,
ref made the decision.
This is interesting, right? Because it feels to me like they're very quietly kind of rolling back.
100% agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
although the Rusi Tuima one today was a bit of a nonsense.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. It was the. So, Clement got a yellow card for a hit on Tuima, and then later Tuima got a yellow card, but it was a head clash with the support runner who was coming to clear the ball carrier. And so, for my mind, it wasn't in the effect of making the tackle, because it was the man who didn't have the ball. So I would have preferred, it was such an unusual incident, I would have preferred it to be a rugby incident, because Tuima is not looking at the support player, he's trying to tackle the man who's carrying the ball. And the support player comes in, I think it was Balmain, comes in. And Balmain is actually probably as culpable, if not more culpable, for that head clash.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But not that either of those cards affected the outcome of that game, the Exeter game, Gloucester game.
Yeah.
Yeah, Northampton just seemed a little bit lost. But the league in general, I mean, there's no unbeaten teams. Even the top team has lost two games. Which is currently Bath. Can you believe that? Bath are the top team in the Premiership.
Not Sale.
Is it not Sale?
Where's Bath?
I thought it was Sale.
21 points to 20, no?
23 points Sale, 5 wins, you, 1 defeat.
Hang on.
What app are you looking
at? Are you
on
Ultimate Rugby?
Am I on Ultimate Rugby? I am. Ultimate Rugby has 21 points to Bath.
Which is correct.
Sale Sharks have got 20.
Which they
haven't
incorrect.
Registered. I mean, maybe it's...
astonishing.
Maybe because... Was the game? Oh no, the game was in Manchester. I was going to say, if the game was up in Newcastle, maybe it was that no one actually watched the game and they're waiting for the messenger to relay the information.
Carrier pigeon.
I've not actually seen the Sale game. Have you seen the Sale game?
No.
Highlights again.
Just highlights only.
Yeah. Sale wingers scoring good tries.
Yeah. What I gather is that actually a very young and relative to Sale, very inexperienced Newcastle team actually put up a proper fight.
Yes.
And it was 25-22. Going into with like 10 minutes to go, and two very late scores for Sale made the scoreline look much more emphatic than it actually was.
So maybe
there's a little bit of hope there for Newcastle and what Alex Codling is building.
The bits to add to that is when it was 25-22 or 26-22 in Sale's favour, Newcastle had missed 75% of their conversions at that point.
Yes.
So had Newcastle actually taken their conversions, they would have been leading. And Newcastle received a yellow card before the final two tries that made it look like an emphatic win. So I've only seen the highlights. Reed and Roebuck are looking really good at the moment.
Yes, they are. Reed
couple
in particular
of nice,
is taking
nice finishes.
And Sale, I think one of the areas they were really short was good back row players. And they found another one in Ernst van Rijn, who just tackles everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the wingers. So my criticism of Aaron Reed for quite a long time is he just doesn't... He's got all the attributes to be a great winger. He just doesn't quite have whatever it is to spot that opportunity and then finish.
He's getting that.
He's got it now.
He is getting it. Yeah, yeah. Right. Experience, because he's still a young lad. He's got the pace over 10 yards is exceptional.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
Phenomenal. So I think he might be Premiership's top try scorer at the moment.
I think he probably is. Him or maybe Rich Lane has scored maybe four or five.
Newcastle must be a miserable place to be.
There'll be a lot to take out of this game,
but it'll
be so disappointing to concede 14 points in the last 4 minutes.
I mean, what are they going to do with what they've done? Because they're not good enough to do anything else. Yeah. Who have they got next week? They have
Exeter travel up there, don't they?
Oh, Exeter. Good luck, boys.
Like, I'll put it this way about Newcastle: is I'm looking at the okay. I'm looking at the names of the back line, and I don't know in some cases what the Christian name is. Just from seeing a letter, that's how. And I like to think I know my rugby.
Yeah.
So Jay Elliott, scrum half.
Jimmy Elliott.
Yeah.
Ballet dancer.
Yeah.
Famous Geordie.
Yeah. Jay Thomas, fly half.
Jonathan Thomas, former Welsh back row.
Yeah.
C. Hutchinson, inside centre.
Don't know.
No idea.
Colin, the old West Ham United. Colin Hutchinson.
I mean, there'll be some lads in there, right, who you don't know now, who I have no doubt will move clubs eventually, because that's exactly what you should do if you find yourself in Newcastle. You should use Newcastle to put yourself in a shop window and move clubs immediately. That's what you should do.
There was one name that I did recognise. The 15, Ben Redshaw.
Yeah.
Do you know why he was on my radar?
But has he played
for Sedgley Park?
Nope. He's a young man.
Bladen, maybe.
He might have done, but...
Ben Redshaw.
So he's a very young man. He's 18. His date of birth is... January 2005.
Oh my goodness.
So he will be 19. He'll be 19 in 2 months' time. So he's a former Sedba pupil.
Okay.
He was called into the England squad this summer.
What?
Didn't know that.
Did you not?
I didn't know that.
So he was called in. I know it was. They never made a big deal of it, but Borthwick brought him in for a couple of weeks into the England squad.
Yeah.
So, obviously, he's got something about him.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Mm. I'm just checking that's a final score. La Rochelle did hold on to beat... JB's La Rochelle did manage to hold on and win against Phil's beloved Bordeaux.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, some of these lads I'm sure will be good in the future, but...
Redshaw... Keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Because he is meant to be very good, very handy.
Well, hopefully what Josh Hodge has done would go to Exeter,
and then get injured.
Anything else that anyone wants to discuss before we
go? Yeah, I might address an email, actually.
Okay.
We got an email this week which claims that I have said that the RFU should put all of their backing behind the private schools.
Hold on. You've replied to this person on email. You're replying.
I just think, like, I spent hours talking about this, right?
I know.
How do people misunderstand what I am saying, right? So, I have never in a million years said that.
But all you need to say is listen to the podcast again.
Yeah, listen
to what I actually said.
This is millions of hours of podcasts about the RFU and how I've never once said that the RFU should be backing only private schools to produce rugby players.
No, this was the discussion about I think you said, one of the phrases I remember you saying, was this last week? You said that they're kind of selling these kids a bit of a lie about...
Yeah, they're lying to the kids, right? So this is how I see it, right? That they look at the private schools as rugby player production.
Look at Ireland, South Africa, look at New Zealand. That's exactly what they are.
And then they lie to the other kids, saying, oh, the game's about skills and community. And what they don't tell them is that the hard work and the physicality, because that message does not chime well with the all-inclusive nature of the RFU. They're not telling the truth about what it takes to thrive in rugby. So you get this sort of dual streaming of the private schools who will happily tell you need to be hard and... go to gym every day.
You need to train very, very hard.
Yeah, it's bloody hard to become a professional.
It is also true that you can
You can do it.
You can do it. My brother did it.
Yeah, but you know, specifically your brother as well. I mean,
state school, late bloomer, not through the academy system, and then.
But your, I mean, your brother as well. In his style of play, it's wholly championed by the RFU, is it?
No.
You know, when the community coaches used to come down, they wouldn't go, do you know what you need to do? Just hit 1,000 rucks and don't miss any of your tackles. Yeah. They don't say that. They say, oh, skills.
Make 25 tackles every game.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and just, you know, we're sort of positionally fluid. No, we're not. No, we're not. So they see the club game and the community game as a production line for rugby consumers, which is why they just want to grow the base as much as they can so more people watch rugby. But they're not interested in your local club to produce rugby playing talent. If one happens to come from there, they're not going to say no, but that's not what the intention is.
And also, that whole thing about there are lies, damn lies and statistics, just on that, there was some data that came out from New Zealand which appears to show what previous data in the UK has shown, is that participation in rugby is on the decline significantly, but we seem to be being told that somehow everything's up with
rugby.
Yeah,
because they just include the women's game, and then when the women's game,
and also people that might watch rugby on the telly and not actually. I don't know.
Really did the numbers in the RFU, I can't remember which study it was, but they found out the participation was nowhere near what they said. Nowhere near. But yeah. Was it like 300,000 apparently? Or?
But I think one thing we can say, I don't know, this is a question actually, not a statement, but bearing when you compare your fears this time last, well, earlier in 2023 when the new tackle height law thing was going through with the reality right now, it's not as bad as you feared, is it?
It's not, because there's not a complete collapse of the club game. So last year, you know, we were getting sent screenshots of away walkover, home walker, away, you know, just whole leagues of walkovers.
And there will be lots of teams that were running last year that aren't running this year. Like,
and vice versa.
Fourth teams, third teams, all the rest of it.
Yeah, and vice versa. So, but I will say this, I think the standard has declined, and I think a lot of lads have exited the game. Like, certainly is the case at Toc H, and I'm looking at the standard of, I mean, it has to be the case for Broughton Park. Has to be the case.
Well, I watched, what level is it? Level 7?
Yes.
Yeah. So I watched a level 7 game last weekend, or weekend before that, or whatever. The
one that I played
in. The Didsbury Broughton Park game. Yeah. And my overriding thought was, this is not as good as, this is a chunk down from where it was when you and I were playing that level.
Well, no, we were playing level 6 then, though.
Yeah, I know, but even so, it's a chunk down.
When I first showed up to Broughton Park, right, wherever it was now, nearly 20 years ago, maybe? 15 years ago, right? It was simply the best collection of rugby players that I have seen. Now, that's because they were paying a shedload of money to these boys. But you had, like, Tom Foden, Ben Foden's brother, a guy called Tom Mapp. Have you ever come across Tom Mapp?
When you don't think so.
Phenomenal player.
Tom Foden played for Chester for a bit.
For ages, and then went to Northampton, and, you know, just
but
awesome.
I'll put it this
awesome.
Way. I played National 1 Newbury, then came to Manchester, played National 1 Manchester until the money went, and then I went to my local club, because by then I'd had kids and stuff, and anyway, so I went to Broughton Park, met JB, podcast started, rest is history. Yeah. But I remember thinking when I went to Broughton Park, this is going to be like Mickey Mouse compared to what I was, but it was like, oh no, this is still good.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking that. And then that's no disrespect to the individuals involved, but I think you're right. If that's replicated around the country, I think the standard is what level 5, what level 6 or 7 meant 10 years ago is not where level 7 is at now.
Yeah, last year this league was much stronger. We were much stronger, to be fair, at Didsbury. Much, much stronger. But, you know, that's just one team. You can't say
I wouldn't dare generalise that across England, but I'm sure people will let me know if that is the case.
Yeah, the reason it's not an absolute nightmare is because largely these laws aren't followed. They're sort of arbitrarily enforced.
Weirdly, there's probably... Yeah. No, you're right. And I was watching my son's team earlier today, Lancashire Cup match, and the ref even said beforehand, the ref basically went, well, it's a wet day, so people are likely to slip, so just, you know, try and keep your tackles
down. Because
but accidents happen. that was the ref before the game.
Yeah,
and it's a fair point. I don't want to throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
The biggest difference is there is absolutely no head contact. But there was no head contact there anyway.
No, and it's always been out. It's always been.
But the idea of the belly tackle, that doesn't exist.
No.
It just doesn't exist. So all of the nonsense they were talking has just been overridden by people actually playing the game.
And refs with a bit of common sense.
Yeah. So the damage was done, I think. when they announced it, with the lack of communication, with the communication of what they actually wanted, which is a vile distortion of the game, and then actually the reality is a little bit different. In fact, it's a lot different. But by that time, the damage is already done. Once you've made that decision to walk away and you fill up your weekends with other things like CrossFit or family or whatever it is, it's hard to go, go back. So once you lose a big chunk of players, you don't get them back.
Mm. Anything else anyone wants to talk about before we
Ugamonia
podcast?
Do you want to talk about Ugamonia?
Yeah, go on.
So, did you see the tweet? Do you want to read the tweet, actually? Because we don't actually know.
I'd rather not read the full tweet.
Yeah,
because there is.
I'll read it. So here is.
You can edit where necessary.
Leaving Sandy Park and one supporter running through the crowd start shouting N-word, N-word. Disgraceful. Not a single person said a word, challenged or even reported it. He walks off after a mild scuffle and fans are now telling me, we are with you. Bollocks. You're not with me. You weren't with me when you saw and heard the most blatant racism I've seen from a supporter at a live game. So fed up. So that's a very, very serious incident which has occurred. Mm-hmm. No two ways about it. And there's quite a lot to dissect in that tweet. You have to do.
It should not happen anywhere in society.
Just to make a broader point on this, really, no one should be subject to someone running up to them to shout abuse of any kind. Really,
yeah.
I mean the fact that it is racist abuse makes it more noticeable.
Yeah,
but no one should be subjected to any abuse. So I don't really know what happens with this next. It's just. So there are going to be two conflicting thoughts here, I think. So one of the conflicting thoughts will be the overriding thing is to kick racism out of rugby, which, of course, everyone wants to do. And then there'll be another one which is kind of, this just shows how deeply ingrained the problem of racism is in rugby. And I think that is the one which will get the most traction.
Yeah, and that is... It's sad if that... Because this... Back to your point before, Tim, about constantly talking about the negatives rather than the positives. The positives of this game was it was a hell of a game. It's very closely fought between two good teams who are bringing English youngsters through and other youngsters from all over the place through to be high-level professional rugby players. The negatives, this is a big negative, but this will get 10 times more traction than anything else.
This is the story of rugby from the weekend.
Yes.
One absolute idiot.
Yeah. That's not to say this should not be a story because
no, I'm not saying
nobody wants it. Like, no. Yeah, yeah. No one wants this.
But I can. So two things can be true at the same time. You can think that's awful, shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And I really wish that wasn't the story of this weekend for rugby because that paints a picture of rugby which is not one I recognise.
Yeah,
exactly for the reasons we said. We want to celebrate all the amazing rugby that there was, and that's going to be forgotten.
The thing which gets me about this, and we kind of have to be a bit careful, but the tweet itself implies that because they weren't. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, it's written in the heat of the moment, and there's a scuffle. Now, I don't know if that scuffle is with other people or with Ugo and the individual involved. I don't know, and that does make a material difference.
Well, the implication from the fact. That he was complaining of a lack of action from people nearby suggests the scuffle didn't involve other.
That's what how I fans. Read it, but I simply
but
don't.
But we don't know.
I simply don't know. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is what will happen, I suspect. Which will be like, well, if someone's willing to say it, what's everyone else thinking? And you know, if you know, it just shows how deeply ingrained it is, and for it to happen at Exeter as well, of all places, who have had their own. Issues in the past, unfairly so, it just rolls up into a very shareable, neat story.
Mm. And Exeter, who we spoke at the top of the show about that they are struggling with paying players.
Yeah.
Hopefully that is just blips and admin errors, as we said before. But Sandy Park, which used to always be full and was expanded on the back of it always being full, is no longer always full.
Yeah.
And it's... You can never unpick how much of that is the fact that a load of their best players have gone, how much of that is the fact that they were called racists publicly for a long period of time. How much of that is just rugby is not growing at this same rate, or actually is declining at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair as well to assume that because people, I mean, people are not in favour of this behaviour. It's not something that anybody wants to see.
No, yeah, no one
is in favour
of this.
So the implication that someone is in favour of it because they didn't intervene immediately. I mean, I don't know what you would tell your friends to do or tell your son to do, but my advice to most people is if a confrontation starts, you don't put yourself in it. You don't volunteer to put yourself in danger. Now, as a personal decision, I might decide to do that, but I wouldn't recommend anyone else do it. So I don't like the idea that he said, you know, no one stepped in to do this.
Yeah. And you can pass out the fact that it's unacceptable and you can understand why it was upsetting. And then also to say that, yeah, drawing any conclusions about what that means about Exeter and or rugby fans because they didn't behave, that they didn't immediately jump in. I mean, for one thing, there's a few things there. If it was a drunk person running through a crowd, which is quite potentially happening here.
It's not impossible.
I might give that individual a wide berth.
Yes.
Because it's unpredictable.
Particularly if you're screaming racist abuse.
We're filling in gaps. We don't know.
Which you do when there's an absence of information, there is.
What you know to be true is if it went down as it went down, it's unacceptable. But I would personally stop short of saying that it tells you anything about rugby fans in general. Because
other than this one moron,
unfortunately, it is the story of the weekend, or it will be the story that rumbles on. And I don't know how it comes to a conclusion. I guess, well, Exeter Chiefs have done what they can. They've put out a statement saying it's unacceptable, and there's a full investigation and fair play. That's all they can do at this point. It doesn't reflect on them as a club. Doesn't reflect on their supporters. I would feel awful if I was one of their fans just going away having got a great win, and then that's the story they're reading. One absolute dickhead.
Yeah,
it looks like has just
A loser, isn't it? I mean, that's it. I know I've said this several times, but the frustration of a loser being able to hijack the whole narrative of rugby, then it's just so frustrating. I mean, you can't give them this sort of ability to trash a game. That's what I would say.
Unsavoury all round.
Yes.
Yeah.
Positives, next week's fixtures.
Yes, go on then, Phil.
So, Friday night, we've got two teams that match up quite nicely, I think, in Northampton and Harlequins.
Harlequins. 1 million to 1 million and 1.
Yeah, hopefully it's good weather. Hopefully nice, dry track. Franklin's Gardens.
You and I got together for a Friday night game a couple of years ago, before COVID, it must have been. And it was a dynamite Northampton team. And maybe Quins were champions at the time or something like that. I mean, it was good Quins time team. And it was awful. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen.
Friday night often seems to be in bad weather. I know that's total anecdote, but it often seems to be worse weather on a Friday night.
The worst game of rugby I've seen, or the best. No, so there's a
6-3
classic Bath Sale.
Well, that is the other Friday night fixture this week.
Yes, where?
At the AJ Bell.
Is it?
Sale.
Are you going to say you might go to that one and then not go to it again?
I might go to that once.
Hosting Finn Russell. See Alfie Barbary in the flesh. See Max Ojomu and Ollie Lawrence and Cam Redpath. The return of Cam Redpath.
Just go and say hello to Alfie. Alfie, can I come and just... Can you just strip off and let me see what, see what sort of shape you really
weigh him.
So,
how many burpees can you do, Alfie?
I'm pretty sure this is going to be one of those games where Sale absolutely batter Bath up front. That's Sale's route to winning this. Because, that's what they have to do. They have to stop that ball getting out to those backs. Mm-hmm. That back line is dynamite. And I know Rob Dupree is on fine form. He's probably the best at outside centre the world's ever seen at the moment.
He played 10 this week, which obviously makes him better as an outside centre.
Yes, we keep
and playing outside centre makes him better as a 10.
I wonder how good George Ford would be at outside centre.
Well, maybe George Ford could play loosehead prop for a few weeks and then he'd be an even better 10.
I love some of the things that Alex Anderson says. So, I think that Sale beat up Bath badly and then win. In the...
I think Sale will win this.
In the Palace of Fun.
Upgraded from a temple.
Beat down Boulevard.
Yes.
But by the way, I will just mention before you talk about any more fixtures for this weekend, just very briefly, your boys Ulster won again.
Yeah, they're doing all right. Yeah. Doing all right.
And all the South African teams lost in the URC.
Yeah, so in the URC, the top six places in the table currently are occupied by the four Irish teams and the two Scottish teams, with Bulls and Benetton making the top eight. But the South African teams haven't really got going yet.
No, but Connacht going down to Durban and beating the Sharks was...
Connacht are doing well. Connacht's the only team that beat Ulster so far this season as well.
And like, that was the Sharks with Deanti, Am, Fassi, Kerwin Bosch in their back line. So they're some proper players out there. So anyway, one to watch.
Yeah, yeah. But Ulster will do what Ulster do and give me reason to be hopeful towards the end of the season and then just fluff it, no doubt.
Yeah.
But I will remain hopeful.
So, Saturday...
So, on Friday night, we're all saying Sale to beat Bath.
Yes.
And I'm saying Quinns to right the wrong. I think Northampton is a good matchup for Quinns.
I agree with you on that.
So, Quinns to put things right and Magic Marcus Quinns, Sale. To look amazing again.
Saracens will beat Bristol in the Maylands Bowl.
Yes. Yeah, Maylands Bowl and the Earl, but Ben Earl Bowl.
Yeah, and Leicester Tigers will beat Gloucester in King's Home. In the Johnny May Bowl.
And
oh, no, that will actually be the
Balmain.
Slater Cup.
It will be the Slater Cup, yeah, Ed Slater, Balmain.
Yeah, Balmain.
But yeah, it actually is the Ed Slater Cup.
Actually is the Slater Cup, which
is a very good cause.
Yes, so are you just naming players that have done... stints at Gloucester
and Leicester.
You missed Anthony Allen.
Yeah, the Allen.
Yeah.
Ryan Lamb.
12 Trees.
Yes.
12 Trees is a great one. Hang on, I've got one for you. What's his name? Went to Bristol. Runs very angry. Very angry runner. Winger. Went to Coventry.
Henry Purdy.
Was
he at Leicester?
He was.
Leicester for a bit.
Leicester and then Gloucester.
Mm.
One more. Santiago Sacchino. He's had a stint at Leicester, has he not?
I don't know.
Brother has. It's his brother.
Oh, Pablo Sacchino. Yeah,
Pablo Sacchino.
The centre.
Juan Pablo. And Santi, yeah.
Yeah. So Leicester for the.
We're going away win, home win Friday night, home win, away win Saturday.
Yes.
And away win Sunday, Newcastle, Exeter.
But I think this is one that Newcastle can. Because.
This is the opposite of the Derby weekend. This is like how far away can we.
Yeah.
Exeter go all the way up to Newcastle.
Rambeni?
The Rambeni Bowl. Did he play for both?
Yeah, the guy who passed away a few years ago.
Yeah.
Didn't he play for Leicester and Exeter?
No, Exeter and Gloucester.
Newcastle and Exeter we're on now.
Oh, sorry, I'm still going for Gloucester.
Yeah, you're still going for Gloucester.
All right.
Yeah, I'll come back to you with the Exeter. Well,
Exeter, Newcastle. Who's played for Exeter and Newcastle? The Hodge Bowl.
Hodge Bowl.
Soon to be Ben Redshaw.
Yeah, Ben Redshaw soon.
Yeah. Anyone else? There must be more.
Seru Rambeni didn't play for Gloucester.
Did he not?
He played for some teams in Fiji, Otago, Leicester, Leeds, La Rochelle, Mont-de-Marsan, and Highlanders. And Fiji Pacific Islanders. Fiji Sevens.
What a cool.
He played Fiji Sevens
in the
2002 Commonwealth Games.
I'm sure there's a big winger of some description that's played for both. So, Gloucester went through a phase. You know when they lost to Leicester in the final?
They picked up the biggest possible wingers. They picked up Vinicolo and Carl Price.
Carl Price, yeah, that's exactly it. I'm sure they had someone from... sure they got someone from Leicester. Oh, this is going to bug me forever now. Anyway, please continue.
Newcastle
Leicester. Do you know how big Carl Price was?
6 foot six.
6'4".
6'6".
6'4".
And I'll go for...
6'6". Hell of a winger.
I said six.
No, yeah, so 6'6" is your...
And 115 kegs.
So you're saying 6'4" and...
110.
So he's 6'7" and 123 kilograms is his listed weight.
How big was Leon Price?
Not that big. That is absolutely enormous.
He is not. Leon Price was the best with the suit.
Yeah, Leon Price was a much better the
court
player.
I mean, this is niche, but I have. The court transcript of Leon Price and another rugby league player breaking into an ex-girlfriend's flat to basically terrorise the new boyfriend.
No.
It's like, the court transcript was like, yeah, we went in there, we were drinking all day, we went in there. Yeah, sure, we were a bit breezy.
Some of those rugby league boys
we were a bit loose
in the UK and in Australia.
Oh,
are,
my word.
No, like, they get up to some bad stuff.
Carl Price, his Wikipedia page, the first sentence says, Carl Price, who is also known by the nicknames of, can you guess a nickname he might be known as?
I got no
The Big
idea.
Show.
Not far off. Big Carl.
Yeah.
And Hightower is the other one.
Hightower, that's good.
To Police Academy.
Wow. Very good.
Yeah. That might be one of the first times I saw a boob, actually. When
Carl Price.
when some kid on our little cul-de-sac street that I grew up on... was like, oh, Police Academy, there's a scene where they're...
Boobs.
Where they're looking through at the women showering.
Ah.
And it was like, oh my God.
Oh, yes, I remember that scene.
Yeah, you never forget those scenes. No, it's like, when you're a bit older, you never forget the hitting pause on Basic Instinct.
Absolutely.
Starship Troopers.
So true.
What's the next one?
I mean, if we're talking about Police Academy shower scenes,
we're done.
We are definitely done.
Right. Yes, thank you for your support. Patreon.com/eggchasers for more. And hit subscribe everywhere. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com and let the boys end.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.